This is the Biblical Mind Podcast, produced by the Center for Hebraic Thought. Honest 5-star reviews help others find this podcast. Visit the magazine at thebiblicalmind.org for articles and videos that explore the deep structures of Scripture.
I was invited in 1966 or 65 to participate in an exhibition, sacred art exhibition, that it was at Baptist Church in Beverly, Massachusetts. In the 60s, it was very popular to have churches put on arts festivals. I was thinking, oh, I have never considered art and my faith as any kind of joining point. So I did three pieces for that exhibition, one of which, when I look back on it now, contains the seeds for everything I've done the rest of my life. So it was really a godsend that I don't know where I'd been without that little Baptist church innocently inviting me to participate. And it was the dean of Gordon College that suggested my name to them. And that piece was monochromatic. It was just browns, but it had all collaged fabrics and this loose suggestion using gesso and modeling paste raised on the surface of the canvas that suggested ancient text. And shortly after that, I began looking at archaeology and paleontology and things like that. It all led step by step by step. And I've often said my whole career is about following the work. Every piece you do raises another question. And your job as an artist is to hear that question, to see that question, and to follow what it's whispering to you. You know, well, it's like, what if? Or suppose I did this? Or, you know, this is similar to something else. And you chase that. I suppose that's similar to anyone even in a writing career. There's ideas that lead to other ideas. And when I look back on my work, I can see it all related. One looks at most of my work and say it was all biblical text. And that is a major part. But now I've turned to art history. And when I've put it all together, I begin to see that my whole life's work has been a conversation with the past. And, you know, that whole thing with the early calligraphic impressions, a Jewish man at a show challenged me. He says, why don't you study Hebrew rather than just fake at it? And that clicked my heels together and I began to study. I studied at the State University of New York. I had rabbis I studied with. So I studied biblical Hebrew and modern Hebrew.
Oh, you did modern as well.
Yes.
And spoken?
Well, I did speak it at the time. I mean, you got to realize this is over 40 years ago. And at one time I could get by in Israel. And I can still use the text from the biblical text. Because I have transliterated Bibles and, you know, I know how to use it still.
I do wonder, so you had a Jewish audience member or a rabbi challenge you to read Hebrew?
No, it was a man who was looking to buy my artwork.
Oh, even better.
Yeah, and he was from Glens Falls, New York, and it really challenged me, and I thought, I'll do it. And the other reason, I was brought up in a home where the Bible was everything. It was a simple little church in New England, a little white church that my relatives had built. And I have wonderful, cherished memories of these godly men and women. I have wonderful, warm memories and all the memorization of Scripture. Then when I went on to college, I went to Berkshire Christian College first, and I studied Old Testament. I absolutely loved it. And a professor there knew that I was interested in art. He is the one who told me to get out of that school and go to Massachusetts College of Art. He went on to be the head of education for the Galilee in Israel. And I met him over there several times. So God had placed very strategic people in my path that helped to direct me where I needed to go.
Ned, you're still on here?
I am. There's so much good stuff. I don't want to jump in.
I think that over the course of my whole life, you know, I was interested in the Word and in the Bible, the text of the Bible. I looked at Hebrew as beginning to uncover some beautiful sort of hidden insights. I mean, the word like rich in Hebrew has its root in heavy, in baggage. Only the rich had baggage to carry around. Those were the kinds of insights I was looking for. But over time, I realized through many different influences, wait a minute, this is not just about words. And I'm sure even at the time, I didn't accept so many literal interpretations as I was brought up with, but I never felt rebellious about it. I felt intrigued. And I think through all the study and through my being an artist, I've come to realize that all those words point to the Word made flesh. And that's the mystery that I hope my work has helped to uncover. Christ, the mystery of the Word made flesh.
So words do a lot of work here, in at least the prints I'm looking at. And of course, you have a very storied career, which Ned is going to talk about in a second. But I noticed that even in your kind of topographical work, I'm going to use layman's terms because I don't know the proper terms here, but your kind of cutaways of landscapes and topography, words still feature in as a crusty layer down in an excavation layer, or just feature along the bottom. Why do words always feature in there?
Well, Psalm 85 says, truth will spring from the earth and righteousness comes down from the heavens. So I looked at all the sciences as revealing God's truth. He speaks to us through his word, but he speaks to us through his world. And so the merging of those two, archaeologists dig and they find artifacts, they find biblical texts, they find things that enlighten us and reveal truth to a deeper degree. So I think, we live in a world. So it was the joining of those, the mystery of God's presence in the world, his word in the world, and the world itself, I think, finds it in those landscape pieces.
Yeah, Wayne Russo, the art historian, has said, his essay in the book on Sandra, The Art of Sandra Bowden, he talks about how she combines the book of scripture and the book of nature, that her typography and geography are merging together, getting compressed to create a synthesized whole that is, I think, fascinating, especially, as Sandra said, with the background in the church. So many folks, and this is my experience too, they don't trust the visual, but they trust the word. And Sandra, in her work, makes a bridge for those folks to engage with both the written word and the deeper meanings of the visuals. Which it's kind of interesting because I think her work can be a gateway drug, as it were, for people, because it brings you in if you haven't had that the exposure to contemporary art. It brings you into that through a back door, as it were, that some folks can embrace a lot easier. Certainly the folks in the church that I've found, like I've had Sandra's work hanging in my gallery And it's amazing to see people kind of light up when they're like, oh, this compressed, you know, she has these, she'll compress the Hebrew text and Greek text and create these patterns, gold leaf patterns that are all collaged together. And when people realize that, it almost gives them a permission to engage the work in ways that they wouldn't have before. And I just think that that's fascinating to see how that has worked together.
You know, there was a point in my career early on, I can't pin to the date, but I did a lot of early work, was extremely abstracted, monochromatic. And I entered regional exhibitions near Albany, New York, and sometimes I won awards and things. And I was onto something then, but I came to the point that, wait a minute, most of the people I know are not going to be able to engage in this. I need to find a way that I can help people engage without them being fear-struck, knocked down, or frightened away from the work. And that's when I turned a little bit more to using the Hebrew text or the biblical text in the work. And Ned's got it right. It disarms them. And I'm thankful for that, because I was in a church in upstate New York, and there was hardly a family in that church that knew anything about art. But before we left, after being there 32 years, there was hardly a family that didn't own a piece of my work. They wanted it. They understood it. They came, you know, most people say, I don't know much about art, but I know what I like. What they're really saying is, I like what I know. And for them to have had time to know me and to trust me and to trust the work that I was doing, they began to appreciate it and love it themselves. And I think that's what's happened in lots of places. I'm grateful for that. Unbelievably grateful.
I believe Sandra has really served the church over the years in incalculable ways because of that. She has both in her work, her artwork, but she's also was president of SIVA for many years, Christians in the Visual Arts, has really worked to bring the arts in the church. And another thing, Sandra is a avid collector of art, and she has the Bowdoin collections, which she rents out to churches. So small churches, they may not be able to, you know, they might not have folks who are going to art gallery openings and stuff, but she actually brings it to them and brings these works together in ways that really help educate and encourage the faithful who you know, may not step into a museum, but she brings the art to their church, and they are then equipped to engage with art and to see the history and the glory of the Christian story as it's impacted in the art world.
Yeah, you know, what is thrilling to me is in these shows that travel, there may be a Matisse, there'll be Rouaus, Watanabes, and no one is going to have a buzzer that rings off because they got too close to it. And they are going to be intimately conversing with those pieces of art that are sent out into the churches. And I mean, that's my hope and my dream. And I pray for those exhibits, that somebody's life will be stirred, will be encouraged. I pray that for my own work too, that it can open doors of understanding, of seeing God anew through the work. That's been my privilege.
I wonder how much you see the biblical text anew, because you strike me as somebody who is, well, I'll just say it, as someone who's way more biblically literate than the average American Christian, I'm going to guess. And you've spent time in the text, both the Hebrew, Greek, but also English. And so I wonder, when you create a piece that's engaging a particular biblical text, what do you learn about that biblical text through the process?
Mm-hmm. Well, when I look back, there are connections I made between, well, the most apparent one in all of my work is the Genesis 1 and the John 1.
Right.
And that came early. That came very early. I saw that connection. But it's over 40, now 55 years. I'm beginning to understand the real, to plumb the depths of that meaning. So I see it speaking to me all across the years. And I think I've come to see myself as a visual theologian.
Hmm. Well, I think a good example of that would be your Law and Gospel piece.
Oh,
yes. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, that is a rich one. And, you know, I am in very liberal churches where you never could talk about these things. Put me in front of my work. Put me in front of a collection that I have, I'm talking about. I can talk about the most intimate theological and have those discussions with people that never would feel comfortable talking to me about that if I weren't in front of the work.
Interesting.
It's so exciting when I give a talk. I can almost, people who have no art background, who have no theology background, they're almost levitating off the floor when they see it in the light of the artwork.
So I'm looking at the Law and Gospel. It's Law and Gospel number 3 on your website?
Yeah, that's just what it is the same as number 1, but I put it on one sheet of paper.
Okay.
Rather than on the two separate ones, because many times I'd see them too far apart or they'd be reversed, you know, and put, I said, this way, they can't make any mistakes.
That's great. And they're not, and they don't feel opposed to each other
no,
as well. They complementary to each other. Yeah.
And you know, that came about because I was thinking about Jesus saying, I've come not to abolish the law, but to fulfill it.
Yeah.
Well, and I've written this down many times. I'm a person that every single year has a list of things to accomplish that year, every month, every week, every day. And I'm not very happy putting a check mark by the side of the thing I've done. I want a line right through it, canceling it out or completing it. So it dawned on me one day, if I do that to the law, the four quadrants emerge, and those four quadrants are the Gospels. Now, an interesting story there is originally I called it Law and Grace, and that thing had been out for sale only a few months, and I received a letter from the Anti-Defamation League saying, what are you talking about? We trusted you more than this. There is grace in the Old Testament, too. So I changed it to Law and Gospel. It was a lesson well learned. Huh.
I just have to ask, as an artist, what does it feel like to have pieces hanging in the Vatican? Because I hear there are some other famous pieces of art hanging in the Vatican.
Yeah,
a couple.
Well, it's extremely exciting. There's no question about that. And to have met all the directors of the museum and to have had nice conversations with them. In fact, they even gave me a tour. They knew I liked the early Christian gallery. They gave me a private tour of that, and I was able to touch the David.
Wow.
And, you know, so in that sense, it's all very humbling. And I guess the question is, I know so many other artists who are far better artists than I am, or at least I think so, and how God has chosen to have my work there and then I helped to install the Florence portfolio at the Vatican because of a connection I have. And now, hopefully, to get other artists. You know, somehow it's in God's plan, and we just have to accept it as that and try to live with gratefulness. Because I tell you, that experience at the Vatican has given credibility to my work among many people who would never have paid much attention. And they look differently on me as an artist. So I think that's something I've experienced and learned this last year.
True. I think that kind of ties in with our last interview with John Hendricks.
Yeah.
How we as artists really struggle with being how we see our work and how we see ourselves. And a lot of it is just people's exposure to it. It's also helpful to have people explain it to you. I think one of my fond memories is of being with Sandra, and my wife and I were there visiting, and the art historian James Romaine was with us, and we were looking through her collection. This was to prepare for the Art of Sandra Bowden book that came out. And one of the pieces that we were looking at was called Maestra, and it's one of Sandra has you know, we've only talked about a couple pieces so far today in the podcast, but it's kind of like, I don't know, it's like saying you've heard a sonnet by Shakespeare, so you're familiar with his work. Right. Not really. Sandra has such an amazing range and has such a awesome catalog that we really aren't doing justice at all. But one of her series is called the Art History Series, and she takes famous works of art and recreates them in gold leaf and kind of a minimalistic approach. And actually, I have this Maestra on the wall behind me in my studio. And it was great to have James explain it, because as an art historian, he was looking at it and explaining how Sandra had brought in aspects of perspective that really underscored how the piece, the original piece that she was basing the work on, was a transitional piece from Gothic art to the Renaissance. And it was great because Sandra was able to be a fly on the wall and hear this art historian describing what she had created. And a lot of times artists are creating things and they don't necessarily make all the connections. I think a lot of my time in the gallery, I'm trying to point people to these different connections and in the artist's work. Mm. But while we're in the heat of it, sometimes we don't see it. So for me, that was one of the fun things to get to see an artist, hear that they're a good artist, and we don't always have that experience
and hear her place in history. Yeah.
Right. Right.
Yeah.
And we don't. You know, as you're creating, you start out with an idea, and I'm not saying you go to sleep, but the cognitive part of it is not dominant at all points in its creation. There's so much that's intuitive. There are things that happen that just happen in the process. We call those accidentals, but they aren't accidents if we just recognize how beautiful they are and can incorporate them and use them. So, yeah, I read over The Art of Sandra Bowden, and I read over James Romaine's interview with me for Objects of Grace. And the art historian, the critic, they know how, they have an ability to weave it together in beautiful language that there's no way that I can do. My honesty is in the visual aspect of it. And there's an intuitive part that's at work. I'm not saying I put aside my mind and my thought. No. But there's an awful lot that comes out of something that's nonverbal.
Yeah.
And that's what's fascinating about Sandra's work. And I think one of the reasons I wanted her to be part of this series is because I feel like for the biblical mind and for the Center of Hebraic Thought, Sandra's work is drawing on all of these elements that that is kind of your bread and butter, Drew.
Right. Well, and I think as soon as you sent me her art, as we were thinking about artists to include in the series, and it was instantly apparent to me. I just looked at three or four pieces, and I don't know how to say it otherwise than like, oh, she gets it. Like, there's real depth here, and in a way in which I think if I put one of your pieces in front of my students and ask for reactions, they'd be able to interact with it, but they probably wouldn't understand why I thought there was some profound insight to these pieces. But then they give me an object within which I can point out what you're doing, and so that what you're calling intuition, I would just add on to there that I think intuition has kind of a logical structure to it. There's work going on in the background,
yes,
even if we're not aware of all the work,
subliminal,
how it works. Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And I see that in your work, that there's a lot of work that has gone in the background, and this is what has percolated in some way.
You know, theology very much interests me. But I'm not really so interested in the in dogma, mm-hmm. or in too heavy a systematic theology. You know, I'm very happy worshiping in all different environments, in the Catholic Church, in the Lutheran Church, the Episcopal, the Evangelical, the Orthodox. I've experienced all of those, and every one of them gives rich additions to my spiritual life. So I have the theology where I settle in to be most comfortable, but I feel wide open to many different interpretations. So I'm not trying to sell a particular theological thought other than God is real and he came into our world and he reveals himself to us. And one of the ways he chose to reveal himself to us is through language. And I've written, good grief, these are nothing but squibbles. They were little pictures at one time, and then they took on sound. And those symbols take on a sound and group together, become a word. A few words makes a sentence, then a paragraph. And before you know it, we've got a book all out of these little symbols. It's a miracle. And it's a miracle that God chose to use language as a way to reveal himself to us. And then, of course, John puts it all together by saying, in the beginning was the Word, and the Word became flesh. It's a marvelous, marvelous story.
Well, I was going to call you Dr. Sandra Bowden because I feel like I have been schooled here by your work and your words together. Thank you very much for joining Ned and I for the Biblical Mind.
Well, thank you for being interested in my work, and may the Lord bless the endeavors that you both have.
Thank you.
Thank you, Sandra.
Mm-hmm. Bye now.
You've been listening to the Biblical Mind podcast, exploring the deep structures of Christian scripture. For more, visit the magazine at thebiblicalmind.org. Subscribe to this podcast at all the usual places so you never miss an episode.